Hope everyone's doing great. You're having a good day. You're excited. You're pumped up. All of those things. My hope is that you'll get something from today's episode. I'm here to relax, educate, inform, and invigorate each and every one of you. So today what I want to talk about is the concept, not even so much a concept, but the election process and a little bit about how we feel about elections. I think a lot of what is happening today in terms of what seems like a lot of division has to do with politics and how the media attempts to influence our thinking and how we feel about certain things. And politics seems to be at the forefront of it all. But I want to scale it down and really discuss, you know, the concept of elections. And in doing so, what you're going to hear a little bit today is a slight history lesson, you know, some information about our actual government. Now, I did some research. It wasn't too in depth, but it was a little deep, I'd say, and I had fun doing it. So what we're going to look at is basically, you know, the government structure and the history of the election process. You're probably going to hear some things that you may not like, but they did take place, and I think it's important to know about these things. And I really hope that it causes the lot of you to do more in-depth research. Like it makes your brain go, I want to learn more. And even me, I still want to know more, even after I compiled this information. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive in. Now, our most recent election that we had in this country were the midterms. Let's just say most major election. And like all of you that are listening to the sound of my voice, I have my own political beliefs and values that I hold very close to my heart. Now, one day, on a future cast, I'll go more into why I think this way. But for now, just understand that I'm no different than anyone else. Now, when I look at voting, there was a time where I even said, well, why should I vote? Who cares? I mean, they've already picked the person that is going to win anyway, right? You know, conspiracy theorists and so on and so forth. By the way, you can't see my air quotes, but believe me, I did use them. I used to take it for granted. And what I realized was, when you don't vote, you take away your own ability to complain about the current state of affairs. So that's why I chose to dive a little bit into this. My first election was when I was 18 years old. So this is about, let's see, I'm today years old. So this is a good bit ago. And I remember at the time I was living in New York, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Bush versus Kerry. It was Bush versus Kerry, yeah. And I voted for who I voted for. And it was, you know, when I was done, I felt like, okay, so what, right? But anyway, let's talk a little bit. Let's start with our government structure, or the structure of our government. Now, some people say we live in a democracy. Some people say we live in a republic. I mean, when you look at the Pledge of Allegiance, which unfortunately I feel isn't said enough anymore, it says in a republic for which our democracy stands. The fact of the matter is we don't live in a pure democracy, and we don't live in a pure republic. Let me explain. We actually live in a democratic republic because our government structure takes characteristics from both. So, for example, in a pure democracy, power is held by the population as a whole. The voter majority tends to have unlimited power to make laws and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, in this type of pure democracy, minority groups have few protections. Now, when I say minority groups, I'm not necessarily referring to ethnicity and or race. I'm referring more to individuals that may have a different idea on things. So, for example, if you have 100 people that like the color purple and 10 that like the color red, I mean, typically the purples are going to win out. Majority rules. And rights can, in a pure democracy, for example, can be overridden by the majority. Now, in a pure republic, individual citizens generally hold all the power. People elect representatives to make certain laws within the confines of what is known as a constitution, which we thankfully do have. Elected officials hold power. The constitution itself is designed to protect the rights of all people from the sole will of the majority. So, as I say, in the United States, we have the best of both a democracy and a republic and a constitution that protects the rights of everyone. So, basically, the best of both worlds. Now, we vote as a country, and the way it looks is that basically whoever has the most votes wins. Point blank, period. Now, I'm not going to get into the concept of the Electoral College because I can imagine that's one of the things that is burning in the back of a lot of your minds. But this is just to give a brief overview of the type of government that we have and the election process itself. So let's start from the early 18th century on how the election process even began. Initially, during the colonial period, one had to be white and own property in order to vote. Now, typically, this constituted being someone of European descent. Now, the property requirements varied by state. And just to give you a quick example, just to look at one state in particular, or a couple of states, in the state of Pennsylvania and the province of the Carolinas, as well as Rhode Island, you not only had to own property in order to vote, but it drilled down into your religious beliefs. You had to be a Christian. Quakers and Baptists couldn't vote in such places as Plymouth or Massachusetts Colony. Catholics were actually disenfranchised following the Glorious Revolution from 1688 to 1689 in Maryland, New York, and Rhode Island, and Virginia. So imagine that, not being able to actually vote, not just based off of whether you own property, but also your religious background. Thank God for modern times. Well, that's the first thank God I'll give for modern times. During the post-Revolutionary War, meaning after the Revolutionary War, going into the Constitution era, there goes English again, I'm sorry. The Constitution originally did not, nor does it now, by the way, did not determine who could vote by race or by gender. But it gave that power to the states to decide. And that's extremely important because even now we still have that separation of powers. I mean, we see that now in the most recent aspect of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, which basically gave the power back to the states to set that precedent of what they would allow in terms of abortion. Going back in time to the early election process that we're talking about, same thing. The Constitution was written after the Revolutionary War and gave the power to the states to decide who can vote and what criteria needed to be met. Now, most states allowed white men to vote who had property. Some states didn't specify race as a factor when it came to vote. So in that case, some free Afro-American males were allowed to vote along with some women in the state of New Jersey. Now, women were still largely unable to vote. But I want to point out that again, some free Afro-American males were able to vote, because I know I have to touch on it, because that is a strong point when we talk about voting. That's probably one of the first things that come to mind, where Afro-Americans and people of color are able to vote. Now the information that I obtained strictly pertained to Afro-American males, but as we will soon see, as those laws began to change and evolve and so forth and de-evolve, other individuals and other people of backgrounds and races and so on were able to vote eventually, we'll say, like permanently. Now, around 1790s, all white men, regardless of property ownership, were allowed to vote in most states. It was around this point where free African Americans and women were then subsequently barred in all states, including New Jersey and PA. Now, by 1856, only white males were able to vote. Non-white individuals, Asians, Native Americans, and so on and so forth, African Americans being included in that pot, were all banned from voting. Point blank period, whether you were free or not. Now, initially, taking a step back in time a little bit to 1776, when we gained our independence from Britain and whatnot, when we became a country, immigrants were allowed to vote. In fact, it was one of the, I guess features is the best word, one of the features or one of the criteria, one of the things that prompted immigrants to come to the United States at that time and call in their home. Now, here's the thing. Many immigrants that were coming in to the country up to the Civil War were actually opposed to the idea of slavery. Let it be known that in other parts of the world, slavery was slowly but surely on the chopping block and being abolished. So when you had immigrants coming from some of these other areas, they looked at slavery like this is something that needs to change. And therefore, if you moved to the South and was an immigrant leading up to the Civil War, your rights in terms of being able to vote, no matter what you look like, you were not allowed. Point blank period. Now, after the Civil War, everything changed. Slavery was abolished, so on and so forth. Union was kept together. These are all good things, obviously. Here's the thing. Around the 1870s in the South, Democrats gradually regained power in Southern legislators and created what we know today and back then as the Ku Klux Klan. Now, I can imagine those that are listening are probably scratching their heads at this, but I urge you to do some research. It was the Democratic Party at that time that were the originators of the KKK. Point blank period. And because of this, it disrupted disrupted Republican groups in the South from organizing. What would happen is that this Ku Klux Klan, the KKK, I'll just call them the KKK for short, they were beginning to lynch blacks and other individuals as an intimidation point, as an intimidation tactic to suppress the vote. There was extensive voting fraud. Some Republican politicians were violently removed from office by Democrats of that time. I really want that to sink in, because I don't think a lot of individuals know, and it's not just because people aren't told, it's just because the research isn't done, and a lot of this stuff is not really discussed in school the way in which you'll find it in other places like the library and other parts of the internet. During this time, we saw Jim Crow laws become very prominent in the South and in other parts of the country. They were designed to keep people from voting by having them pass impossible tests at that time, which were usually used as criteria to allow people of color, immigrants, and poor whites to vote. Now, these Jim Crow laws initially affected blacks, Native Americans, immigrants, and poor whites. However, later on, it really just affected blacks and other people of color. Poor white individuals did get a reprieve later on due to loopholes in certain laws. Through lots of political battles, boycotts, strong leaders, both black, white, green, blue, and orange, segregation was ended and Jim Crow was broken. Segregation was ended much later, but initially Jim Crow was broken. But it took a very, very long time. I'd like to take a moment just to take my hat off to those individuals that fought on everybody's behalf to break those Jim Crow laws. I wanted to go through that a little bit for you all here today, just to give you an idea, a small taste of the history of the election process. Now, obviously, all I did was scrape the surface, the very top of the surface. But I think it's important to have some type of background on why, even today, if you're on the fence about voting, think about everything that others went through just so you can cast that ballot, no matter what you look like. No matter what your political background is, that doesn't matter. What matters is that you utilize the voice that's given by this government and make it heard. In other countries, you don't have a voice at all. It may look like you have a voice, but you don't. And I'm not going to name any countries because that's irrelevant. But I think it's important to be thankful for where we are now and to understand where we were. Now today, voting is super simple. All you need is to be 18 and have a valid driver's license. That's it. And obviously to live in the county or state in which you're looking to vote. I think what we're seeing today is the media plays a huge role in attempting to drive the populace to vote one way or the other. Now, I will say that in terms of myself, I have been someone a long time ago that would look at the greater overall media and allow myself to be influenced by what they thought about a certain candidate. And it wasn't until, I want to say up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe less, maybe a little bit more, where I said, you know what? I'm going to turn them off, do my own research, and vote based on not just how I feel, but based on what they're saying. And I will say what I found is no matter what side of the equation you stand on, it's important for you to do your own research, because a lot of times what happens is we realize later on that our choices aren't really our own. We just wanted to follow the status quo because the media and whoever else made it seem as though this was the correct choice. Now, I will say that at this point in my life, whenever there is an election, I make sure that I look at my own issues as far as the issues that I agree with, not my personal issues, but the issues that matter to me. And then I'll research the candidate, the usually two opposing candidates or the candidates, see what they say and how they fare and how and what they think about the issues that I myself are putting at the top of my list as most important to least important. And what I've found is that a lot of the time, the media is not telling you the full truth about everything. They'll give you sound bites and say, yes, this is what this person means. And then when you go find the full amount of information that's available, you find out that, wait a minute, that's not exactly what they said. So I say all of that to say, it is important, once again, and I'm going to repeat myself, it's super, super duper important to understand your own morals, values, and things that are important to you when it comes to the election and or voting process. it is important to really look into each person that is running for a particular office and just be honest with yourself. I mean, like, really, just be honest with yourself. Do I believe in the thing that I think I believe in? Do I see this person really vouching for those things that are important to me? And if the answer is no on some of those things, what are some of those things that you can let slide? What issue or issues mean the most to you? Because see, what happens also is you may agree with somebody on 3 out of the 4 points, or 3 out of the 5 points, let's just say 3 or 5 points. And the other 2 points you could be vehemently against. So I would implore that individual to really decide, hey, can I live with those 2 things that this person has an opposing viewpoint on? Or can't I go with the other person? Or should I go with the other person because I can't live with those 2 things? Just food for thought. So what have we done here today? Well, we went over the history of voting practices in the United States during the colonial period, post-colonial period, pre-Civil War, post-Civil War. Again, this was just scratching the surface. I just wanted to give you an idea of what it looked like for certain groups of people. One thing that I found about history is that it's super complicated. And most times, you're not going to get the full picture without doing your own research on the side. And I'm just saying that to empower or push those that are listening to do the research for themselves. Don't take what I'm saying for granted. Because I could, again, I'm just a voice in cyberspace, right? But I've always believed that if you really want to know something, you got to look into it for yourself. How deep you decide to go is entirely up to you. But again, I just wanted to give a high-level overview of what the country looked like when voting practices were first enacted, how certain groups were affected, and just look at where we are today. We do live in one of the greatest countries on the planet just by virtue of having a voice in the political process. I think that it's important for everyone to realize this very important fact. In other countries, I won't name any, but in a lot of other countries, you don't have a voice. You don't. Depending on your ethnic, racial, or whatever background it may be, you may not have the same type of voice that you have here. And the only requirement for having that voice or exercising that voice is to be a citizen, have a valid identification card. I know earlier I said driver's license, but in reality, it's just an identification card. You don't necessarily need a driver's license. And you just need to know your polling station, not your polling station, the place where you vote. I guess that is called the polling station. And that's it. And I think because we've become so media driven, some people end up voting against their best interests. I mean, I feel like I have. I can't speak for the entire country, but I feel like I've voted against my best interests a number of times just based on the way I think now as a father and husband. So I'm very happy for where we are today as far as the people of this country having a voice and being able to vote. I still think we have a lot of work to do. And I hope that each and every one of you that have tuned in, taken into consideration all the things that I've said as far as researching those candidates or candidates. Research yourself, like look into yourself and see what you act and really, really know what it is that you actually believe in. What morals and values do you really hold dear? Turn off the media. Turn off the noise. Turn off your friends and family and really think about what you really, really hold true to your heart. And go based on that information. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for listening. I really do appreciate you. Please comment, reach out, download this cast, and I'll see you on the next one.